In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me is my Wild West compatriot, my dead body that I'm taking around so people can see how he died in a famous shootout, his corpse in a casket with a glass cover case, the one, the only.
You can see my corpse if you got the belly for it. Travis Ratz here.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast, where Travis Ratz and I dive deep into graphic novels and trades. You, my friends, are on a comic book club episode. It is a book club, but with comics. We're like Oprah, but we're not. And we are reading our final Western of the month of March. And this book is The Enfield Gang Massacre, out on Image Comics.
Pew, 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 pow, 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 pow.
Written by Chris Condon, with art by Jacob Phillips, color assist by Pip, Mr. Pip Martin. Pip is a fun name. I don't, it kind of sounds like a cowboy. It could be Pip Martin.
Colors. I put some more blues in the sky for you, sir. I hope it serves the story well.
Thanks, Pip.
Thanks, Pip. Travis Ratz, I got to know, you're wearing a shirt.
I didn't read it.
You know, you're,
I gotta tell you, Travis, I didn't read it.
I didn't read this book. Travis, you're wearing a shirt that I assume has to do with it says cocaine and rhinestones in the font of Coca-Cola. Was that purposefully worn today because we're talking?
It's not. This is my day is, oh, I'm not going out in public anymore, and I'm throwing on a sweatshirt. So you've probably seen this several times on there. It's also a great podcast that Tyler Cohen, David Allen Coe, the country singer, does about the history of country music stars.
So what I'm saying is, it's very Western. You have a it is, and my sweatshirt, Texas is the Reason, is what I've got on today.
Oh, so I see what you're doing here.
Right? So wearing my Texas is the Reason sweatshirt, you know, I feel that we're both dressed for the occasion. Is this is a West Texas book that we are reading?
Yeah, you know what? When people meet us, Josh, the first thing they probably think is Texas.
But yes, I think as I have my Detroit Tigers hat on and a Texas is the Reason sweatshirt, which is because of the band, I got it in California at a Wild West town. I saw Texas is a Reason on their reunion tour at a Pappy and Harriet's out in the middle of nowhere, desert California.
What's a Pappy and Harriet's?
Pappy and Harriet's is the name of the venue, and it is a bar and grill with a stage in it and a stage out back. I got to eat a beautiful steak dinner from Pappy and Harriet's while Texas is a Reason was doing their sound check. And if I could imagine what heaven is, it would be that.
I remember you telling me that story. And I believe Enfield Gang Massacre opened up for Texas is the Reason that night.
I'm going to start a new band, and that's the name of my band, is the Enfield Gang Massacre. It does sound like a wonderful indie band, like the one of those late 90s like emo post-hardcore bands. Let's get into it, Travis. Let's get into the Enfield Gang Massacre, our final Western. And if I could say the most Western of Westerns.
I'm laying my car. Hey, Josh, I'm going to go ahead and lay my cards right down here on this poker table, surrounded by these saloon and all these lovely saloon girls, and say this is my favorite of the Western books that we have read so far.
All right. I'm going to let you have that. And I want you to tell me why. We're reading Enfield Gang Massacre. It is the story of I don't know if it's a real massacre, if it's a famous massacre. It's hard for me to know if any of this is true, because one, I did no looking into it, and it feels like it's based on a true thing. I'm not from Texas. I do not know a whole lot about Texas history, but it feels like it's based on something. And it is very much a very Western tale. So tell me, Travis Ratt, what made this your favorite Western book? Before we get into what the story's about, tell me why this is your favorite one we've read.
Okay. So in order to do that, one, I got to tell you, this is not a real massacre.
Okay.
So, but I'll tell you why it's my favorite. Because Josh, didn't it feel like
it did
this was a real event? Like, yeah. Almost to the point where you're like, are you sure it's not? Did you look this up? Like, what's going on here? And that, I think, is a testament to the writing and the world building in this book, where I felt like I was being dropped into this county changing event, this small county changing event. And I think, if I remember correctly from that Texas Blood, which I think we both liked, and in this one, the thematic thread of, you know, towns contain, like, you can be born into a town and it has this history and legacy that shapes you. And is it like, do the people shape the town, or do the town, does the town shape the people?
Yeah.
And these ideas that, something in small towns or small counties, something can happen hundreds of years ago, but the ramifications and the ripples can just exceed far past it. Not to mention the art and then the framing device of the Texas Star article in here, I think just for me made it a real chef's kiss of a, it felt like it had stakes because it made it feel real. The stakes felt real.
Yeah.
And it also, because of making the fictional massacre feel realistic, these feel like real people. So I felt empathy for them. And I felt like when even characters we didn't know for very long died, I was like, cause I didn't know it wasn't real, Josh, until after I read it.
And I would, that was an interesting piece for me, cause it feels very much, and I didn't believe the framing device that Chris Condon uses of the kind of journal article uncovering the truth of the Enfield gang massacre, that it wasn't truly a, you know, they weren't criminals. I mean, they were criminals, but it wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, this whole thing was based on something else. It felt to me like, okay, well, I know that that doesn't feel real, but is it a commentary on a real event? And should we not trust the history that we get? And I didn't, you know, I'm not from Texas, but I do know that, like, Texans love Texas history, right? Remember the Alamo, all of that. But I also know that I grew up in Michigan, where every child had to listen to, not every child, but in the town I grew up in, and for many Michiganders that I know the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. We, like, I know it became a funny thing to put on the internet and in memes, and the song was kind of all over this last year when it was the anniversary of the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. But I truly learned,
I think you might have an algorithm that's pushing that out to you, Josh. I don't know any of that stuff.
I had to learn and sing the song by Gordon Lightfoot as an elementary student in Michigan, the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. So the largest steel bearing vessel to sink in a lake.
Did you have to put your little hand over your heart when you
sang?
Little
hand on my heart. The legend lives on from the Chippewa down of the big lake they called Gitchagumi. Travis, the lake, it is said, never gives up or dead when the gales of November come early. So I understand.
I think you have your independent graphic novel idea already there.
It went down because of a supernatural sea monster that lives in the Great Lakes, a Native American sea monster. If I can. So I get that idea of, like, knowing your local history and that being a point of pride, right? A point of like, we know
identity.
This is where we're from. Yeah. And an identity. So that was interesting to me, this play on, like, here's an event. We all know it, but it's not what you think it is. I thought that was a really interesting kind of framing device for this. And you've kind of told me that none of this is real. But I will tell you, reading it, it felt like I was uncovering the true story of something that we didn't really know about. And that's powerful. It was a powerful kind of take in this book to do it that way.
Didn't you leave really kind of, I mean, we kind of all have to be like this, and the internet has kind of made this a little more difficult to be, but the idea of how events are presented to you, like just being like, oh man, like we always want to put things, people in white hats or black hats, right? And really that there's these complexities to it, even not just in fictional Westerns, but in actual history. Even when you look at someone like Custard, or you know, these Davy Crockett,
Daniel Boone, right? Like all of
Daniel
those
Boone, these people, yeah, they're presented in a certain way. But we know that, I mean, well, we look at this whole, I mean, without getting political about it, but the whole Cesar Chavez thing that's coming out lately, too. And for me, in reading this, it's like shocking, like, oh, like how these it could take root, right? Because this story presents itself as I think we need to frame it better. Go ahead.
I want to pause and kind of talk about the story before we get into all of this pieces, right? So the story, I mean, we're 10 minutes into the podcast and we're finally going like, here's what the story's about. So the story,
well, we had to hear about that sunken boat, Josh.
the story here is presented to us is the true tale of the Enfield Gang Massacre, this tale of a group of outlaws who lived on the outskirts of an up-and-coming town
in Ambrose County,
a West Texas county. And it's the story of the reality of Ambrose County. And I think this is Westerns as a whole, the idea of like the modernization of the West, of leaving Western justice behind and coming into real law and order, of how these towns that were kind of, you know, the Wild West shootout and the change of, you know, good and evil to know. This is a modern city. We have the rule of law. And so it's this story of getting rid of the lawlessness in Ambrose County and turning it into a law-abiding town. But what we're getting through this is the tale of, no, this wasn't actually this terrible gang of outlaws. It was a community of people who lived on the edge of town. It was not just, it was like, you know, Native Americans in
free, a commune
of people living outside. Now, did they do some crimes? Yes. Mm-hmm. But the crime that they are being framed for to push out, this horrific sign of murder of a bank teller, was not perpetrated by them, but it was perpetrated from the inside of the town to kind of like shore up power in the town.
Set up, right. Yeah. It was a setup in a way for, in this case, they're presenting it as a local business owner coming in and trying to take a greater foothold of power, being anointed sheriff after the sheriff who was originally there disagrees with it. And so it does become this, a really interesting guy. I mean, just reading it let's talk about this. So
yeah,
there's kind of three stories in one here, because we actually open up on a different frame where we start with like this wild bit, like this Wild West
sideshow.
And we have like this huckster character showing off the body of Montgomery and Enfield's corpse.
Yeah.
Right. So we know our protagonist dies at some point because his presumed body is in this box. And then we go into meeting, go back in time to the later 1800s in Ambrose County. And we meet Enfield in this really charming scene where he's robbing this bank for like the third time in 3 months.
Yeah.
And there's this really cute banter of like, hey, why are you robbing me? Why don't you just come work for me? If you keep robbing me, people are going to stop putting their money here. And he's like, I'll see you next month. Right. And so there's
Tarnation.
Kind of understanding like, hey, it's late 1800s. We're at kind of the end of this, you know, Wild West phase on here. This is kind of what we signed up for when we moved out to places like West Texas.
Yeah.
And that is cut by that same baker being brutally murdered and hung in that bank. And that sets off this chain of events that Josh was talking about.
Meanwhile,
the massacre, the 3-day massacre that took place over 3 days at several locations in the town. And then that is cut by this fake star report that is written so well that it does feel like a real historical document or a real journal that someone who has done the research on.
It does feel very much like a long form story that you would get in Reader's Digest or in, you know, like a magazine, like
an academic magazine. Review. So the swinging back and forth from all of these just kind of lets you see this story from different angles, almost like different camera angles. Or already, even though this is a short story, it feels like the story has now been told in multiple forms, an academic journal, a comic book, there's a sense that gives it epicness outside of the story, which also makes you feel that it's real. So while the story itself is pretty straightforward, you know, like someone's framed and set up, they have to shoot their way out of it. It doesn't go well for the gang. The modes of storytelling in this book are what I just found was extremely exciting, unique. And I was like, we got some storytellers here. We got some storytellers here.
I want to talk about the way that you and I experience this book, because I did a dumb thing. And sometimes this is what people do when they recount. I usually read before bed. And what I normally do is I read a novel, right? So I'll read however many pages of a novel. And then I go, okay, I got to switch to something different before I go to bed. And that's when I read
graphic novel.
I read like a graphic novel or trade or comic book or whatever I'm reading. So that's kind of normally my diet. So when I hit the fake news story in here, my head went to, all right, it's just more back matter, right? Mm-hmm. Like there are writers who oftentimes like to give you essays that just tell you what they're writing about. And it was like skipping the pirate scenes in Watchmen. I was like, I don't need it. I don't need it.
Yeah.
And I finally read them last night and this morning to kind of like, okay, I've got to read it. I'm going to go back and read it because I felt like I was missing something from the story. And gosh darn it, was I missing something by not reading those prose pieces that really laid out a lot of why this is, it made it feel more real. It made it more impactful. And I am disappointed that I did not experience it as it should have been experienced. Mm-hmm. I got to blame myself, but I also kind of go like, if that's your framing device, maybe isn't great if it's easy to skip.
Right.
But,
and go ahead.
But I, you know what I mean? Like I should have read it that way, but I didn't.
I think you can let yourself off the hook and be kind to yourself, because comics have taught us, especially trades, that when we get to those essay type things, right? Because the Watchmen thing is a little bit different because that's still comic book form. It's still comic book panels.
Yeah.
But we have read countless and countless trades in comics where you do get these essays that separate things out that are just filler. Or I don't want to say filler, but aren't written as well as this. Whereas much care and research and structuring, I mean, this person has pulled out and Conley pulled out and like mirrored like that academic journal voice so well, sets up these characters. And but like to let yourself off the hook is that we've been taught that way. I'll be honest, when I turned to it, because I read this like, I started reading it like not last night, the night before. I've been really busy this week. And so when I hit that essay page, I was like, oh man. So I was this close, Josh, to just doing the same thing you were. But then when I flipped through it, I read the first one. And then when I got to the second one, I go, oh, this is part of the story.
And I would tell you, so there's part of me that goes like, I wish it was intercut more often. Mm-hmm. Because I'm going to tell you, like, had I read this in single issues, I probably would have missed those altogether.
Right.
As a graphic novel, you keep getting hit with it. When you read it as a trade, you keep getting hit with it. But there's part of me that goes, remember we just, The Deviant is a book that we read, I don't know, 2 years ago.
About a year ago, 2 years ago, yeah. God.
And that book does this framing device of him finding out this story to do, he's writing it, or is it a podcast? What, he's like interviewing somebody. And so it keeps cutting back and forth in between. Part of me goes like, ooh, that would have made this book way longer had you decided to like make that graphically part of the story. But there's part of me that goes like, man, maybe we could have intercut those pieces differently. Or if this were a graphic novel, if this had just been a graphic novel, maybe I would have read them. The fact that, or if it had only been a page, some of these are 2 pages, Travis. And I was like, oh man, that's a lot of, that's a lot of reading. And having read it, if you haven't read this book, read them. It is an integral part of the story that frames it and builds the momentum a lot better.
For me, the most integral part of the story.
Yeah.
I think it survives as a fast-paced, well dialogued, beautifully drawn Western. The interstitials make it a poignant comic.
Yes.
Where it becomes something where, I mean, we always read comics if they're comics. So we're always on the lookout for something we haven't seen before. Even if it feels like something we have seen before, if they do it slightly differently for people who read comics a lot, that's enough to make it a wholly different approach to storytelling in comics.
It feels, it's a really important piece of it. And I wish, man, I wish that there was something that at the beginning that was like, dude, I wish it would have started with that. There's part of me that goes like, man, I wish the first page was that, and it may have read it.
Can I give an example of what it does really well that it adds to it? Is you have a lot of characters in this so-called gang, like, or the commune characters, like these types of people who live in this town. And a lot of them in just the comic form of it appear briefly before they get gunned down or killed. But then they get so much more fleshed out. Like the girl who has the knives and, you know, she's just like throwing knives, or like the guy
with the Gatling gun,
yeah, stuff like that. And in particular, it really sets up your antagonist, the Montgomery, or not Montgomery, that's the main guy, but, the new sheriff, the new face of the law, that
maybe
didn't read that. You're like, oh, well, who's this guy? But when you read the back matter, or when you read the interstitials, you're like, oh, this is really about him and his place in the county. And then there's this beautiful, not beautiful, I guess is a very vague word to it, but there's a Texas Ranger in this, Eli, and he gets a lot of, he gets about a whole page in the interstitials, which paints him as someone like, was he evil? Yes. Was he good? Yes. You know, like he went through, and they tell like another story that he did. Like, so for example, they talk about how this Eli character was at a bar, and this woman, this guy was, he was drunk and he was making up some story, and his wife comes in, she's just beaten half to death. Just face is a bloody pulp. And so to his frontier justice was to castrate him and then parade his body around town. And mind you, this, I'm reading this, I'm still thinking this is a real historical story.
Yes. I would tell you, so there's, it reminded me, okay, so we've read a couple books by Tom King on this before, where Tom King kind of subverts and tells a comic book story in a very different way. This device felt very Tom King, felt very like, you can read this story as a, like you said, a well-paced Western shoot 'em up. Or if you really want to look at it a different way, here's a way for you to look at it differently. And I think having gone back and reading those interstitials, as you said, as you've been calling them, really gave me a different story. And it felt, I mean, man, it was far more powerful, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, it meant more by reading that.
We talked about colors as a voice in storytelling on the last episode of our Westerns. And this was another voice added to it by the writer.
And if we just want to, the colors on this are magnificent anyways, right?
And I love the change of the word balloons for like a couple of times where they just do like the soft, like pastel pink in there when they're saying something like, really like hang them to the wall. And you're just like, oh.
There's one scene that's just colored as someone who lives in the Southwest. They're having a party because they've robbed the bank. They're having a party. They're celebrating. They're kind of throwing the money around. And we see Enfield out on a rock and someone comes to, like, one of the other gang members comes to go talk to him. And he's like smoking. And the color palette is a blue and pink and orange. And it looks Miami, but my goodness, if it is not what some of those like magical Southwest sunsets look like, that turquoise and rose. Right. Yeah. And that right there, it is literally 1-2 pages where you get that in the entire book. Mm-hmm. And you just go, that color palette was chosen for 2 pages. It doesn't really show up like that again. And it hits in a way that it's very cinematic in a way that cinema doesn't often do, because cinema usually finds a color palette that they use the whole time. Mm-hmm. Right. They color wash it. They grade it in a certain way. But
like a Wes Anderson color grading or something like that. Yeah.
Right. And this is definitely like that moment. You're like, ooh, that's pretty.
Speaking about art and color moments that I really like, there's this part where they're pinned down like this barn or this stable on there. And it feels like a Tarantino scene. I mean, they are just like drowned in blood. And it's the blood with like the grit on it and the dirt underneath it. And their faces are just washed down.
And like viscera.
The conversation they're having. Yeah, viscera. Perfect. The conversation they're having is about betrayal, and they find out who betrayed who and why. And with them being just soaked in gore and viscera, I was just like, oh, wow. Like it felt like Kill Bill.
It did. Like, and there are scenes in here. There are some brutal scenes. Like there's a pastor who's with them. Who like goes out to go like, the God has given us rain. And then splash Page's head gets blown off by, the law that are after him, right?
Horses falling on people, crushing their legs. Yes. And I've got to say, I know the art on here too, but I want to go back to that story there at the end. Yeah. It has a good ending too. I felt very satisfied, especially when you reading that back matter on there, it ends with Amy Enfield. Where in the fake research there, they find a connection to her. Our researcher actually goes out and interviews her, like her great granddaughter, and like who she became after this. She got remarried. She had, she actually had Enfield's son at some point, Clayton Enfield. And so you're like, oh, wow. Like, even though it's a brutal massacre and a real brutal book, there is some hope and like this idea of a generation continuing. And then we go back to that carnival barker and we see that, she was able to get this body and bury it and put it to rest. And I was just like, oh, wow, that's really powerful.
There's this one scene where he's about to get hung and you see her imagining what their life would be like if she could just save him. And for a moment you're like, oh my God, she saved him. Right. Like you see her like lean back in the chair, bust the guy, grab the gun, shoot the rope that's hanging him. They escape on horseback. But in reality, he's just hung. And yeah. she's off.
She loses it. And like yeah. they let her lose it for several panels.
Yeah. Right.
They let her wail and be like, this is you. You let this happen to the town, you yeah. know? And then when we go back to that Texas blood, that's that same, it's that same county. Yeah. And it's the ancestors of those same people who are all too happy to make quick judgments and let law make right. decisions where morality should come in and be a part of that discussion.
And if you take, and that's the other piece of this that is even more layered. I've only read the first volume of that Texas Blood. You've read the second volume. I want to reread it and then read volumes 2 and 3, which are out. I believe volume 3 just came out. And what I want to do is this is another layer to that larger story, which makes this even more interesting as an exercise for an author,
mm-hmm.
right? To tell a tale that has no connection, but you get to kind of live in that world. At the end, the idea is that like, if you stare into the eyes of this mummified corpse, right, you'll see your own death. And so that Carnival Barker says, and he still may get his revenge. How? Well, if you gaze into those petrified eyes, you will see the coming of your own death. And his wife is there. His, you know, like Amy is there seeing the body. And he says, well, what do you see? And she gets close to it, pays her money to go look into the eyes. And then what she sees is him, that smile. Mm-hmm. And you see like that tear come down her eye. And that's the end of the tale. And it is just, man, it's good.
It's good storytelling, man. Yeah.
It's good storytelling. It's very cinematic. It very much feels like, ooh, this could be a movie where you use that device, that storytelling device of I'm writing this story to make this very powerful tale.
Yeah, it wasn't written. This was crafted, you know, I'm going to craft it. And I'm not saying it's everyone's taste, because honestly, if you read comics, you're like, hey, I read books and then I read comics and I never the two shall meet. Then this probably isn't the tale for you, because if you're not going to take the time to read the interstitials, then honestly, I don't know if there's enough panels in there to make the price point work. Well, that's not true, because the art, honestly, you could strip all the word balloons out of here and it's still just really great to look at.
It's a gorgeous book
on there. Yeah. I mean, and it's fun to think about Brubaker and Phillips doing something very similar with Criminal and building out the generations of the crime noir genre. And it seems like that's what our guys are doing here. But with this, instead of it being Criminal and that crime family and those crime families, it's Ambrose County and their ancestries on there. So
it's a very interesting thing, like
kind of looking at a way to tell long form stories in comics.
And I would say like this, I mean, we read that Texas Blood, and that Texas Blood, this feels like Jacob Phillips is separating himself from his father in his art a little more. Right. Mm-hmm. Like it's still, you can still tell that they're cut from the same kind of artistic cloth, but it feels different.
It's in looser, a way. It's splashier.
Yes. Yeah. It's less focused on, I think Sean Phillips makes the background a real key part of what he's doing a lot. And that is less of the case here. Right.
That's true. Excellent point.
Those facial actors really pay a real key role in this. Man, it is a gorgeous book. You nailed it. Like every one of these panels is pretty spectacular in its own right. There are several close-ups of Enfield's face throughout this that are, you're just like, man, that's like a Western, like put that on a wall. Like it is a magical looking book. And I think once you get to see the whole, at first I didn't know how I felt about it until I read all of those extra pieces last night and today. And I was like, oh yeah, no, this is something special.
Mm-hmm.
And it took reading all those pieces. So if you're thinking about reading this and you aren't going to read those, you're going to miss what's a really important part of this book, what makes this story more heartfelt, more interesting and kind of more like impactful is right. those pieces of it, you know? Yeah. So Travis Ratz, we have spent an entire month reading Westerns. My question for you, did you get your Western itch scratched?
I liked reading three back to back. I don't think it's scratched. Western music and Western media is something I came to later in life, maybe like more like 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And so I always find myself feeling like I'm always at the beginning of my Western journey, you know, because there's so much out there, especially from the mid 20th century, you know, like yeah. where there's just so much stuff out there, tent poles in Western cinema, Western books, and even in Western comics that I haven't, I just have set these huge holes in, and I love it every time I go into it. And it's also one, it's a genre where, because I don't have a lot of people in my circle who are hugely knowledgeable about it, that I kind of have to find my own path, you know, yeah. and pick up things and then, you know, from there. So, didn't scratch it, but definitely created some different avenues. Like I know that I can go and listen to the audiobooks from Dead Acre, a novelist. I know I can go play some Red Dead Redemption. And this book here, The Enfield Gang Massacre, really kind of got me curious about real life Western articles in journals, especially about places that, you know, in the Southwest that I live. Like this summer, I might check around Tucson and see if I can find some locally written books about local heroes or villains or gangs. I know I've been to Tombstone and you get a lot of those there. But it opens up that genre to like, what if I read some like nonfiction Western literature, you know, that'd be kind of interesting on there. So
what I think we should do, Travis,
didn't satiate my thirst, but definitely added some hunger.
When you're here this summer, I believe we should watch Tombstone with three fingers of whiskey, my friend, and just
okay, skin that smoke wagon, see what happens, John.
Oh, that's right.
So, how about you?
It made me appreciate
Western month.
It made me appreciate the Western genre a lot more. I you know, I don't read as much. I live in the Southwest, but it's, you know, it's where I live. It's not really what I'm, you know, I don't seek out a whole lot about it. But I really did enjoy kind of three very different Western stories. I think we got a good amuse-bouche of Westerns, you know, that supernatural Western, this sort of realistic portrayal of a Western that we get with the Enfield Gang Massacre, and then this sort of like coming of age tale, kind of
gone with the wind,
road trippy Western
Americana. Yeah.
That we got with the Blood Brothers.
You know,
mother.
The Blood Brothers mother reminds me a lot more of, if you read Faulkner, it feels very Faulkner, like his Eye Lay Dying to me. It feels like it could have been the plot of a great American novel, you know,
right?
A Lonesome Dove or something, you know.
It feels big. And so it was nice to have what I would consider three very different Westerns. And it makes, like I said, I want to go back and read That Texas Blood Volume 1 again and go read Volume 2 and kind of catch up on it, because I want to see how it all ties together in a different way. I've really appreciated this kind of foray into this for us. So Travis and I normally like to tell you on an episode like this what the next books are coming out. But we got to tell you, we haven't picked what the next books are coming out.
Oh, let's do...
We're bad people. We're bad people and we haven't done it.
No, what was the... let's do some of these absolutes.
You want to do that next?
Let's knock out some absolutes. I think you all said right. They're free on Kindle too, which is always enticing to me.
So here's
awesome
what we do.
For our readers to hear.
So we did Absolute Batman. And so now, why not do Absolute Wonder Woman and Absolute Superman. Those will be the next. You want to do those next two books? Those will be our next two books.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So our April two books in April for sure will be Absolute Superman and Absolute Wonder Woman. I've already read Absolute Wonder Woman, so that bodes well for me. And so we'll do those two for sure, and we'll find out what else we're going to land on. Folks.
And we're about ready to start announcing our big summer event coming up here. We'll probably do that in April.
I'm excited for the silly summer event that Travis and Rats and I have awaiting for you, as we love to just do an event summer. But I would tell you, this has been an event year thus far, Travis Rats, starting in November? When we did, we did Spooky October, because we always do. Then we did Noir November, and we've kind of built up this idea of
we're playing things around. This is our kind of like a transition year, as we're kind of looking at kind of rebuilding things, keeping it fresh for ourselves, kind of learning from our past, I don't know, 11 or 12 years in this podcast, trying to keep things fresh and trying to make it not just work for the listeners, but make it work for ourselves, and to find new ways to engage and talk about or cross talk about comics on here. So we're trying out a couple of different things this year and seeing which of them flows we like. So that way maybe we can have a more curated podcast experience in coming in 2027. I'm trying to be as vague as possible because we're still in the exploratory phase.
Yeah.
Does that sound right to you, Josh? Is that
kind of what sounds right to me? And I would tell you, if we're gonna switch anything up, it'll probably happen after the big summer event, as we're looking to see what we do next, right? I think seasonally, that's how our podcast falls. As educators, we often live in the world of after summer, new life begins. As the leaves fall and die, that's when we bloom as people.
Jed Akers.
So thank you for tuning in. You can find the podcast on your favorite podcast app. Write a review, rate us, whatever it is, help people find the show. We appreciate it. You can follow us on the internets. You can follow us at comicexposure.com, or you can find all that stuff. Or if you feel like joining us on the social media, we are on Instagram at Comic Exposure. You can find what books are coming out. You can see us share some dumb panels from the books we read or things that we enjoy. And we will see you all next trade.